Chapter 13. Perry gone but not forgotten. Finally, the last day of Perry at the Ninth Circus arrived. He officially no longer worked for the court. He was now a private attorney. The huge law firm Morgan & Morgan, knowing nothing of his tyranny at the Ninth Circuit Court, gave him $1 million a year to work for them. Of course, there was no confirmation that's what they paid Perry, but it was probably in the ballpark. You see, Morgan & Morgan had no way of knowing any of the despicable things Perry had done at the Ninth Circuit. All they saw was the judge of the Casey Anthony trial. They estimated Perry's worth based on his notoriety. It's my assumption they thought that Perry's fame could pull in high-profile black clients who were deciding between Morgan & Morgan, or the other ambulance chasers in the industry. So, they got their million-dollar guy, without knowing all the crimes Perry had committed as the chief judge of the Ninth Judicial Circuit Court. They never knew of all the women Perry had taken advantage of. They never had the remotest indication that Perry was a womanizing, cheating husband who took advantage of any power awarded to him. You know, I have to think that Perry was unhappy when he joined Morgan & Morgan. He could no longer walk into a room of judges and feel that wonderful sensation that each one of them was kissing him on his puckered anus. Understand, attention was all Perry lived for. I think he would have worked for no salary as the chief judge just to experience that daily high. To make him happy, Perry had to have a massive number of people who either feared him or at some level respected him, which in Perry's mind was indistinguishable. Perry had his own interpretation of the word respect. He felt the only way you could respect him is if you feared him. He couldn't garner genuine respect by doing noble deeds and making lives better. Hell, that took too long and required too much energy. His concept was fear me or I will make sure you fear me. He didn't have any friends in the normal sense of the word. All he had were lackeys and other evil SOBs that globbed onto one another to increase their covenant's power. David Owen, the former British Foreign Secretary and a neurologist, and Jonathan Davidson, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University, call this the hubris syndrome, which they define as a disorder of the possession of power, particularly power which has been associated with overwhelming success, held for a period of years. In Latin use, a dictator was a judge in the Roman Republic temporarily invested with absolute power. Interesting that the word judge was part of that translation. In the end, Perry decided not to try to force me out. Instead, he left Jezebel without a protector. This bitch, however, had no intentions of going down without taking Perry down with her. Until the very end, their psychotic relationship was still quid pro quo. So Perry was gone. Unfortunately, Jezebel was still there. While exiting the building for the last time, it was as if Perry cut a really repugnant fart and the smell lasted in the halls and offices of court administration for 2 more years. That's how long it took to groom Chief Judge Lawton into understanding what the fuck was going on, or more importantly, what the fuck had gone on over the last 20 years. There was so much ground to cover that Lawton couldn't be expected to go from 0 to 100 miles per hour in a few minutes. Court administration couldn't just walk in on day one and unload all the horrible stuff that had been going on during Perry's rule. After all, Judge Lawton believed that Perry shit diamonds out of a platinum asshole. I kind of get that. Perry had hung on to power for decades, so he had to be doing something right. Right? At least that was the judge's perception. Don't get me wrong, it was a high priority to get Jezebel gone. Yet, it took almost 2 years of convincing Lawton that this was a moral imperative. It's kind of like soaking leather long enough so you can force a needle through it. Consider this. You're a new chief judge who is under the belief that Perry was maybe the most amazing chief judge in Florida history. Then, as soon as you sit in Perry's still warm chair, you have court administration telling you that not only Perry's shit stinks, but it's frickin' nuclear shit and he's shit on everyone and everything. He's shit on both Orange and Osceola County administration. He's shit on most of the Ninth Circuit judiciary, whether they knew it or not. He certainly shit on everyone in court administration that was a manager or administrator. And he shit on all of his female sexual victims. Any new chief judge would not out of hand trust court administration. Why? Because they're wired to trust judges, not court administration. They have played on the judge's team, and court administration is the other team. And they go into this game with the belief that the judge's team is a Division I college team and court administration is a high school team. If you're a respectable judge, you innately believe that all the judges on your team are respectable. Convince them otherwise, that takes time. That takes court administration untold hours of meetings with the new chief judge, and even this act had potential consequences. Move too fast and unload too quickly. The new chief judge might call bullshit on you and out the door you go. That's why it takes so long. It's like telling a wife their dutiful husband and wonderful father has been arrested for molesting, then killing children. Until all the evidence has been presented and the gavel sounds, that mother or wife is intent on fully supporting their husband until the grisly end. It's only years later that she finally begins to believe the unbelievable. When it comes to leveling with a new chief judge, the challenge is his or her unabridged belief in the judiciary, no matter what they're being told. You might have a new chief judge that believes court administration has gone off the rails and has lost their minds, and then liquidates the entire department. Like the new president of the United States, which has filled in on how many aliens are under glass in Area 51, every court administration department throughout the state has information to share with a new chief judge they wouldn't typically share with common judges. In most Florida circuits that don't have psychopaths running the show, the information would be instructional, like how the budget works, how court administration operates, as well as telling them rules the last chief judge instituted. For example, one chief judge made everyone in the court, except other judges because they can't tell other judges what to do, change our email auto-signatures that were posted at the end of every email, all be formatted with our name, title, department, address, email, and phone number. He also had us add some legal saying he thought was important, like a quote from Plato. Justice in the life and conduct of the state is possible only as first it resides in the hearts and souls of the citizens. This was the same chief that wrote me up for wearing my court polo shirt with shorts when I was off from work and not even on site. He really hated shorts, but then he wore a three-piece suit when he worked out. So every chief judge gets a combination of being schooled and informed. However, for poor Chief Judge Lawton, he got both barrels of a perilous information cannon shot into both of his ears at point-blank range. Even after that barrage of truth, he was still hesitant in firing Perry's girlfriend.